Good morning. In the year 1803, President Thomas Jefferson purchased a large portion of the United States called the Louisiana Purchase. In 1804, he sent the famous explorers, Lewis and Clark, to explore that land. But it wasn't the entire land. Their path took them more to the north, through like the Dakotas, Montana, Idaho, Washington, that area. There was another expedition, and started in 1806, that he sent out to explore this more southern part of the Louisiana Purchase. This was led by a lieutenant in the U.S. Army who had the name Zebulon. You don't hear that name anymore. Zebulon. As this group neared the eastern front range of the Rocky Mountains, Zebulon saw what he called a small blue cloud, which as he neared, he actually saw was a towering mountain. As they neared this mountain, they made a camp, and Zebulon and three others went off on their own to explore what he called Grand Peak. And after attempting to climb to the top of this mountain in November of 1806, Zebulon wrote this in his journal. "Here we found the snow middle deep, about waist high. No sign of beast or bird inhabiting this region. The thermometer, which stood at 9 degrees above zero at the foot of the mountain, here fell to 4 degrees below zero. The summit of the Grand Peak, which was entirely bare of vegetation and covered with snow, now appeared at a distance of 15 or 16 miles from us, and as high again as what we had ascended, and would have taken a whole day's march to have arrived at its base, when I believed no human being could have ascended to its pinnacle. This, with the condition of my soldiers, who had only light overalls on, and no stockings, and every way ill provided to endure the inclemency of the region, the bad prospect of killing anything to subsist on, with the further detention of 2 or 3 days, which it must occasion, determined us to return to camp." Zebulon didn't believe that anyone could climb to the top, to the pinnacle of this imposing mountain, and he was forced to turn away, give up his intention of climbing this mountain, and return to his camp defeated. This man's full name, Zebulon Montgomery Pike, and the mountain he tried to climb is now called Pike's Peak. Zebulon Pike was one of the first Americans to see this mountain. Obviously, there were probably Native Americans around who would have seen it first, and we don't know if they climbed it or not, but the first European American was this group of explorers. This is one of the tallest mountains in the United States. It is over 14,000 feet tall. And it says that he and his men spent a day climbing it already, and they basically were at the base. They hadn't even really gotten very far up, and they had to turn back. Pike never got to the top of the mountain that is named after him. He never got to the top of Pike's Peak. After going back to camp, he and his group of explorers, they continued to explore the area, but from what I could see, they were right on the border of the Louisiana Purchase, and then the Spanish territory was a little bit to the south. And they kind of got lost and ventured too far south into that Spanish territory and were captured by the Spanish, held there for several months. And eventually they returned them to the U.S. Army. Then Pike was returned to military duty, and he was killed in combat in 1813, 7 years after first seeing what's now called Pike's Peak. The first American, to climb Pike's Peak that we know of wasn't until 1820, 14 years later. Zebulon Pike tried to climb this mountain. They weren't able to, though. There are mountains in our lives that we're going to have to try to climb. These mountains are trials, temptations, tribulations that are along our path to God. These mountains that try our patience, our endurance, our trust, and our faith. But they can also make us stronger Christians and can bring us closer to God. I'll be reading some pretty well-known verses. James chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. These mountains in our lives, these trials, temptations, God does not put these temptations in our way. He puts tests in our way to test us and to try us, to make us stronger. He tests us by giving us he gives us these tests because he expects us to pass them. He knows what we can do. He knows we can pass them. So he's giving them to us to make us better. I found it interesting that from a distance, Pike didn't think that Pike's Peak looked all that imposing. When he first saw the first image, it was a small blue cloud. But when he got closer, he realized it was bigger than he expected. I remember from the times that I've been to Colorado and first driving out there, you can see the first shadow of the mountains. And they look like a cloud. It does. It looks like a cloud there. And they don't look as ominous as they do as you get closer. And as we travel through our lives and we come upon these mountains, these trials and temptations, a lot of times they don't look like a big deal at first. They look like a pretty cloud. But as we keep going towards it, as they keep getting nearer in our lives, we can see that they are more dangerous and a lot more imposing, and we can understand just how hard we're going to have to work to get over them. Zebulon Pike did not know what he was getting into when he started heading west from St. Louis. This was in the summer of 1806, and from what I was reading, Pike didn't think it would last more than 6 months, his journey. So they didn't really pack a whole lot. They didn't pack for heavy winter weather because they didn't know what they were getting into. They were the first ones, as far as, again, what first Americans to go out that far. As it said in his journal there, they didn't have the right equipment. Basically, they only had weather clothing on. They didn't have parkas or overalls on, to snow boots to help keep them warm and protected from the conditions. As we travel through our lives, we may not be prepared for certain trials, for the mountains that come upon us. There may be something that comes into our lives that we just can't handle. We don't have the right clothing, equipment, or experience, and it's better if we turn back and try again later. As I mentioned, God knows all of our strengths and our weaknesses, and he's not going to put a test, a trial in our way that we cannot ascend. There is a way up to the mountain. We need to find the way. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man. But God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." With every trial, there is a way through it or a way back. We can either turn back and try again later, but there is a way to the top of the mountain through the trial. We need to find it. As I mentioned, Zebulon Pike never made it to the top of the mountain that bears his name. But I have. I've been to the top of Pike's Peak. There's a picture. Picture, a couple pictures. 14,110 feet. It says they changed that. It's now 14,115 feet. It must have grew 5 feet. But I've been to the top of the mountain that Pike himself couldn't climb. How was I able to get to the top of Pike's Peak when he wasn't? It's because Pike tried to go up on foot, and I went up in a car. Because many other people went through the struggle of making a road up to this mountain so other people could have an easier time getting to the top as well. From what I read, there are even several visitor centers along the road that you can stop and shop. And when you finally get to the top, there's even a restaurant and gift shop up there. It's much easier than doing it on foot. But we need to find the road. Obviously, there's probably a lot of people who probably still want to climb it the old-fashioned way, and more power to them in the physical mountain. But if it's a trial in our life, we need to find the easiest way possible. We need to find the road that other people have done, that other people have made for us. If they have gone through a similar trial and they have found a way, we need to follow their way. We need to ask them and find help. There's a cartoon that Ethan used to watch that has this girl struggling to climb this mountain. She finally gets up there, but when she gets up there and looks around, she sees the other side, there's an escalator going up the other side of the mountain that she could have ridden up to the top. She didn't even have to drive. She just could have stood there. We need to look for the best way through our trial, not just assume that it's going to be hard. Don't get too intimidated by the trial. God tells us we will be able to bear it. We can get through it. We can get to the top. In James chapter 1, verses 2 and 4, we're told that we should be joyful when facing a trial. Why? Why should we be joyful? Because every trial, every difficulty and challenge is an opportunity that brings us closer to God. It can help make us stronger. Again, James 1, 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. A mountain climber does not sprint to the top of the mountain. He doesn't run to the top. Mountain climbing is a slow and steady process. You need to take your time. You cannot be in a hurry to climb a mountain. It takes patience. While climbing Mount Everest, I've read, which is the tallest mountain, it's the highest peak in the world, over 29,000, so over two of Pike's Peak. But when you climb Mount Everest, it takes many days to get acclimated to the weather, to get used to the conditions. Even with proper equipment and all the oxygen and stuff you need, if you were to just go up day after day after day, keep ascending, your body is not going to be used to it, and it's going to give out on you. A lot of times they go up to a level, to a camp, and then they go back down. And they go up a little bit further and then back down, just so they can get used to the changes, and they stay there a while. It's not a quick process. I know one of the times when I was in Colorado for a family reunion, 11 or 12, somewhere around there, and I was all excited because we were going to climb a mountain. And it got started and all gung-ho at the beginning. I don't remember how far I made it, but it wasn't to the top because I was beat. I was out. I couldn't go on anymore. I had to stop and rest. And I remember sitting there and being able to watch some of the others who went on still and be able to watch them through the woods kind of going up through. But I wasn't ready for it. I mean, you have to, like I said, you have to be prepared. You have to be conditioned in order to beat these mountains sometimes. And that's the same with our spiritual trials. Even the best of the best can have trouble sometime. Edmund Hillary is one of the first two men, he and his guide were the first, to climb Mount Everest. But he didn't successfully climb it on his first attempt. He attempted to climb Mount Everest in 1952, but he couldn't reach the top. And a few weeks later, after this attempt, he was speaking to a group of people, and he walked over to the side of a stage. He made a fist and pointed to a picture of Mount Everest that was there, and he said, "Mount Everest, you beat me the first time, but I'll beat you the next time, because you've grown all you're going to grow, but I'm still growing." He was still growing. He was getting better. He could get more experience. He could learn from what he didn't do right this time and grow. 1 Peter 3:18 says, "But grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. To him be the glory, both now and forever. Amen." And from what Greg read this morning in the reading from Ephesians chapter 4, I'd like to pick out verses 14 and 15. "That we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in the things into him who is the head, Christ." If we can't overcome a trial, if we can't climb a mountain one time, we can wait, have patience, grow in experience, in strength, and try it again. When we're facing a trial, we need to have patience. Even though it may not be comfortable, even though it may be challenging or painful, we cannot hurry through it and take shortcuts. We still need to make it to the top. I think Noah had a trial that taught him a lot about patience, and it's, I had to think about this one differently, because it's, I don't know, you wouldn't normally think of it as a trial, but once the ark was built, once Noah built the ark, and God was getting ready for the flood, Noah and his family and the animals were in the ark first for 7 days before any water fell. They were in there for 7 days, all shut up, before anything happened. God wanted them to be ready. He wanted them to be prepared. He wanted to teach them patience for the rest of their journey, which was not going to be short. After 5 months of floating around the earth, the ark finally came to rest on top of Mount Ararat, on top of a mountain. But they couldn't get out yet. They could feel the boat settle, I'm sure. They could feel it hit, but they couldn't get out. So now they're still stuck in the ark. They're not being tossed about anymore. That was probably reassuring, but they still couldn't get out. They still had to wait for God. I'd like to read some of the story from Genesis chapter 8. Shows just how long and it shows the patience of Noah. Genesis chapter 8, starting in verse 6. "So it came to pass, at the end of 40 days, that Noah opened the window of the ark, which he had made. Then he sent out a raven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself a dove, to see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, and she returned into the ark to him, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her, and drew her into the ark to himself. And he waited another 7 days, and again he sent the dove out from the ark. Then the dove came to him in the evening, and behold, a freshly plucked olive leaf was in her mouth, and Noah knew that the waters had receded from the earth. So he waited another 7 days, and sent out the dove, which did not return again to him any more." Now this was in the 10th month on the first day. So by the time he got all the doves out, about 10 months, 15 days. "And it came to pass in the 600 year, in the first year, 601st year, in the first month and the first day." So this is another 2 months later, after the dove didn't come back. "And it came to pass," like I said, "in the first month and first day, that the waters were dried up from the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark, and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. So, up to this point, I don't think he could see out. I think there was a window that he could send the dove and raven out. I don't think he could see out until he removed this covering. Then he could see that the ground was dry. He still didn't go out. He still waited until the second month, on the 27th day, so almost another 2 months until they come out. And then God spoke to Noah, saying, "Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you." Can you imagine what it would be like to be stuck in there, not being able to see anything for a year, and then know the dove didn't come back? You know the dove landed somewhere, but still waiting to get out, because God hadn't given him the instruction to yet. And then taking the covering off, seeing it for yourself, and still not going out, because God hadn't given you the signal. He hadn't told you to. That is patience. God spared Noah from the flood and brought Noah to the top of a mountain. He brought Noah to the top of this mountain that surely tried his patience. We're not told that God talked to Noah at all during this time. He might have, but again, we're not told. But we're not told if he told them how long he would be in there, or if it was just a waiting game. How long was he going to wait? But Noah had patience, and the biggest thing is that he had faith and he trusted in God to help him through that trial of being stuck. I mean, that had to be traumatic. I mean, knowing everyone else around you is dead, the earth is covered, and I'm sure you would want to see what it's like outside. But they waited. They had the patience. In April of 2006, there's a man named Aaron Ralston who was what they call canyoneering. It's basically when you climb around in and around deep canyons, big crevices in the earth. It's not really mountain climbing. I'm talking about mountains, but it's close enough. He was doing this canyoneering in Utah. And while he was descending this very deep and narrow canyon, this boulder from which he had attached his ropes to came loose, and it crushed his right hand and pinned it up against the canyon wall. He was stuck. And of course, he didn't tell anybody about his hiking plans, where he was going, anything. So no one was out searching for him at this point. No one would be. They didn't know where to go. So for 5 days, Aaron survived with very little food and water. He rationed it off very wisely. All the while, he was trying to free his hand from this 800-pound boulder. And some of the methods he used were very ingenious, but it was just way too big. He couldn't move it. So, finally, it came down to life or death. Aaron ended up breaking the bones in his right arm and using a multi-tool to cut it off. And then he had to climb out of the canyon. Climb out of the canyon, down a 65-foot sheer rock wall, all one-handed, and then he had to walk 8 miles to his car. Luckily, he didn't have to walk all 8 miles. He found a group of campers who were out camping and exploring themselves, and they were able to call for help and get him rescued. And, yeah, look him up. His story is amazing. But Aaron faced a mountain of a trial, even though it was in a canyon. It was a mountain of a trial. And in order to get to the top of that mountain, to overcome that trial, he had to make a sacrifice. His arm. We may face mountainous trials in our lives that require us to make a sacrifice. Hopefully not a body part, but we need to make a sacrifice. Something that is important to us. We have to be willing to give up something in our lives. We may need to stop doing something or going somewhere or seeing people. We may have to make a sacrifice. I'd like to continue in Genesis just a few chapters further in chapter 22. Start with verse 1 of chapter 22. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham. And he said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. I'll stop there for now. There was a mountain in Abraham's way. There was a mountain, a trial mountain in his path. But in order to prove his faith, his love to God, Abraham was being tested to see what he was willing to sacrifice, what he was willing to cut off to show his love and his faith. Abraham had to show God that he loved God more than his son, whom he had waited his entire lifetime to get to receive. Like I said, there will be trials in our lives when we need to show God that we love him more than you fill in the blank. Each of us have things in our lives that we love, but would we be willing to give them up? And not just give them up. Abraham wasn't instructed to go to the mountain and leave Isaac there for dead. Just leave him and go away. He had to kill him himself. We would have to do the dirty work in our lives if that's the trial that faces us. Continuing from verse 9. And they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, Here I am. And he said, Do not lay a hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by its thorns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it for a burnt offering instead of his son. How do we give our love to God? Once Abraham reached the top of Mount Moriah, once he reached the top of this mountain, he didn't have a debate with God. He didn't ask God if he was sure. He didn't ask God for a ram. He didn't ask God for that ram. He didn't try to get anything else in place of Isaac. Once the altar had been made, Abraham willingly tied his son up, put him on the altar, and then stretched out his hand to kill him. God did not force Abraham to do any of that. He did not control him. He didn't push him. He asked him to, and that was it. You take a sponge and fill it with water. That sponge holds that water until you squeeze it. You look at a flower. This flower has a beautiful fragrance, but you don't have to squeeze the flower to get the fragrance out. The flower freely gives its fragrance without any squeezing or prying. God does not want to squeeze our love for him out of us. He wants us to freely give it to him like a flower. He wants us to just give it without any prying or squeezing, like a flower, like Abraham did. Abraham was willing to freely give his son. And he passed that trial. He passed the test on the top of Mount Moriah. Thinking of trials in my life as a mountain, it's made me think about a well-known passage from Matthew chapter 17. Never thought of this verse in this way. I'm not sure if this is how it's intended, but it was interesting. Matthew 17, verse 20. Jesus had just removed a demon from a boy that his disciples could not remove. They tried to remove this demon, but were unable to. They were asking Jesus why they couldn't. Jesus tells them, like I said, in verse 20. So Jesus said to them, "Because of your unbelief, for assuredly I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." I've always thought of this verse literally, that actually moving a mountain, and Jesus could have meant it literally. I know he definitely could have done it literally. But I couldn't help myself to think of this verse figuratively too, like Noah and Abraham, so many others listed in Hebrews 11, the faith chapter. They had a great amount of faith. And if we would have that kind of faith, would we be able to move the trials in our lives? Move them, because they're a mountain, remember? Could we move them, tell them to move, and they would move? I don't know if they would move, because I think God still wants us to go through those trials. But I think having faith like that, and having God to help us, to hold us, those mountains may not seem like mountains, they may seem like speed bumps, which would be the same thing as moving them. Like I said, I just couldn't help but think about that verse referring to mountains. I've said it earlier, that Zebulun Pike didn't get a chance to climb Pike's Peak. He didn't even have a second chance. He didn't even get to go back and try it again. If we fail to climb the mountains in our life, we do have a second chance. If we take Jesus with us on our climb, as our companion and our guide, then he will be there to help us if we fall and give us that second chance. I already mentioned Edmund Hillary and his guide, Tenzing Norgay, who were the first two to reach the top of Mount Everest. After they reached the top, they still had to come back down. During their descent, Hillary slipped, and he started to fall, and he actually went over the edge of this crevice. And he is obviously attached to the Sherpa guide, Tenzing Norgay, and being trained in this, Tenzing automatically threw his axe down in the ice, caught himself, braced himself against that rope, and saved Edmund Hillary. At the bottom, the press that was there covering it made a huge fuss over Tenzing Norgay's heroic action. But through it all, it says that Tenzing remained very calm, very professional, and very uncarried away by it all. He didn't get caught up with the fanfare. But to answer all the questions, to all the questions, he had one simple answer: mountain climbers always help each other. It wasn't anything special he did. Mountain climbers always help each other. They're just something you're supposed to do. When we're climbing up our mountain, there will be times when we slip, when we fall, but Jesus will be there to save us. He'll stick his axe in the ground and hold us. But even when Tenzing Norgay held the rope for Edmund Hillary, Hillary still had to climb out of that hole. Tenzing was holding on. He couldn't still pull because he would let go. And then they would both fall, probably. Edmund Hillary still had to climb out. Jesus is holding the rope for us. He's holding our rope when we slip and fall. We have to come back to Him. We have to keep on climbing. But He will save us. 1 Timothy 1:15. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the chief. And then from John 16:33. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. We are going to have tribulations. We are going to have trials. But Jesus has overcome the world. And He did so by giving up His perfect life, a sinless life, sacrificing His body, giving up His blood, sacrificing Himself, because He loved us. We're the thing He loved more than anything else. Jesus gave up His life so we could have the opportunity to live an eternal life with Him in heaven. And if you need assistance on your climb to the top, if you want Jesus to hold your rope, if you slip and fall so you can come back to Him, you're invited to come forward as we stand and sing.